Hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Now, it is the 23rd of August, 2025, and Lucy Connolly has just been released from prison, having served about 40% of her 31-month sentence for inciting racial hatred contrary to the Public Order Act 1986. And she did this via, I quote, saying, mass deportation now, set fire to all the fucking hotels full of the bastards for all I care, while you're at it, take the treacherous government and politicians with them. I feel physically sick knowing what these families will now have to endure. If that makes me racist, so be it. And she wrote that at 8:30 in the evening in response to the massacre in Southport of three little girls, stabbing many others, by the ethnic Rwandan Rudakubana. This was viewed 310,000 times and reposted 940 times. But just over 3.5 hours later, she took the message down. Now, she pled guilty, and the left are going on and on about this. Oh, she pled guilty, she pled guilty, she knew what she was doing. Let's look at the circumstances in which she pled guilty. It was circumstances of utter hysteria, in which the Prime Minister had stated, you will be arrested, and you will be tried, and you will be found guilty, and you will go to prison. So, in effect, he was pressuring both the people that were accused of crimes, and pressuring the judges to be as severe as possible. He was interfering with the legal system. So obviously she would have felt that the best thing to do in those kinds of circumstances was to plead guilty and hopefully, you know, get a bit of a slap on the wrist. That's probably what was expected. Secondly, she was denied bail twice, even though people that commit equally serious, crimes, I would argue she's not guilty of incitement, of course, because if you hear what she said, for all I care. But nevertheless, obviously, someone like Ricky Jones, he was given bail. He was a year out on bail despite directly inciting murder against his political opponents in front of a crowd. So the judge should have taken all this into account. The judge should also have taken into account that she was a first-time offender. She had an unblemished record. She had a child she had to look after. No harm had come as a result of her tweet. She deleted her tweet extremely quickly. But no, of course, he threw the book at her and sentenced her to go to prison, which he didn't have to do. And so what we're saying is this is a corrupt system. This is corruption. She was treated in this way because she was considered to be right wing. Her husband was a conservative councillor. And there were cases of people who have been found guilty of sexual assault and have had suspended sentences. Yet an example was clearly made of her in order to frighten the opponents of the left-wing regime, and she was sent to prison. She's been interviewed. She's just got out. I'm going to watch the interview, and I thought, why not film it? Why not film it, and just for my own interest, really, see how I react to it. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play the interview. I'm going to watch it, and that's that. And I can't get it to go up. I will. Yes.
And I mean, really hurt me.
Connolly.
Hi.
380 days in prison for a tweet written in the heat of the moment. You've been described as Keir Starmer's political prisoner, the poster girl for two-tier justice in authoritarian Britain. That's quite a heavy load for a wife, mum and childminder from Northampton who collects Emma Bridgewater china. Lucy, how are you feeling? You've been free woman for 24 hours.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I wasn't really believing it until I saw it. I obviously don't trust the system, so I was thinking, I'll believe that this is my release date. When I knew that was my release date from the beginning, so it was not a surprise. I did all my time.
Yeah.
But I knew that there really wasn't any other way they could keep me in there. But I don't trust the system.
We communicated. You said, I think they'd keep me in here forever if they could.
I do actually.
Why?
Believe that. I don't know. I would never understand. As you said yourself, I am just a woman from Northampton living in a three-bed semi that worked as a childminder. You know, a husband is an engineer. Okay, he was a counsellor, but that people forget that's almost like a second job. His first job was an engineer, as a father, as a husband. We are nobodies. We are not known to anybody.
This is the important thing about it. So it's interesting. She's quite articulate. Even though her job is low status, childmind or whatever, she's obviously quite articulate. I don't know how educated she is. I wouldn't be surprised if she is quite educated, but she's quite articulate. And so this only goes to show just how out of character writing a furious tweet like that probably is for someone like her. Although obviously she's coming across as well as she can. It's an interview, but she's evidently articulate. And so I think that this is a significant thing that should have been played in her favour. And of course she doesn't trust the regime, and it's the ordinariness of it, I think, that is so frightening for people. This isn't Nick Griffin and Mark Collett being up for inciting racial hatred, people that have made themselves public figures. This is just a private person. This could be anybody. This could be you. This could be your mum. And this is the kind of thing when anybody's under threat that makes people react against the regime.
I will never understand how it got to this. And, you know, as I said to you, there's people that have done things far worse and people wouldn't be able to name them, but they'd know my name. And I just find it all really, really bizarre. The whole thing bizarre.
Before we go back to the Southport massacre and the tweet that started this nightmare for you, I wanted to get your opinion on this recent case. Some people have said it's similar to yours. Ricky Jones, who was a Labour councillor during that Southport riot period, he addressed a protest. He said disgusting Nazi fascists should all have their throats cut. Ricky Jones had just been found not guilty of encouraging violent disorder. He was held on a lesser charge, while you, Lucy, got 31 months in jail for a crime that was only online. Is that an example of two-tier justice?
I think it is. However, I'm pleased that the justice system did work for Ricky Jones, and I'm, you know, glad that he was able to get bail and he was able to seek, you know, good legal advice and, you know, have time to stop and think about how he was going to plea and all of those things. I wasn't, you know, given that luxury. I don't advocate that we should be throwing anyone in jail or for saying, you know, he did as I did. He said something that he shouldn't have done. It was silly. Does it really make him a criminal? Should we be putting people like him and I in prison? Absolutely not.
No, and this is the law. This is the Public Order Act 1986 that tightens up on free speech in this kind of way. And it's clear that that act has kind of been ignored. While even though it was there for the most extreme circumstances, the prosecutors turned a blind eye to that act and felt that it wasn't in the public interest to prosecute people under that act, unless, of course, it was people like Nick Griffin and Mark Collett, unless they saw them as threats to the regime. So, and they had to prosecute Ricky because for consistency's sake. But it's obvious that increasingly our regime regards ordinary people and their tweets as threats to the regime. That's how paranoid they are and how concerned they are they might lose power, which is very interesting.
I want to take you back now to the 29th of July last year. You were at home doing your childminding, 6 or 7 little kids running around that back garden room, all the chaos of that. What sort of ethnic background were the children running around in your house?
Most of my children, in the 11 years that I've been childminding, I looked after way less white British children than I have of children of, you know, immigrants. Most of my children are born in Britain. Mm-hmm. I have a couple with, like, you know, Romanian passports or Nigerian passports and stuff. But yeah, I would say 90% of the families that I've worked for over the past 11 years have been of, you know, ethnic backgrounds: Ghanaians, Nigerians, Romanians, Lithuanians, Polish, you name it.
But you had a really great relationship with those people from different
backgrounds. Nearly all of my families, as I said to you earlier, when you work.
Again, this is a very interesting thing that there's actually studies on this. People on the right are more likely to have, as it were, ethnic friends than people on the left. And the reason for this is essentially that people on the left are snobs. They want to associate with people they regard as high status, and they don't regard non-whites as high status. And that's why in America, for example, white liberals will alter their speech codes when dealing with black people, because they regard them as, it's obvious what they regard them as, whereas white people will just treat them the same, use the same code that they would normally use. So it's very, very interesting, this, that of course she gets on with these people from different backgrounds because she's conservative, and therefore she's reasonable, and she's not neurotic, and because she's not that neurotic, she doesn't have to be a snob, and she doesn't have to reassure herself by only associating with those whom she regards as powerful and important, which is what a lot of leftists in their social lives, not perhaps with regard to who they'll meet politically, is what they do.
When you look after somebody's children on that level, day in, day out, these people are doctors and dentists and teachers. They're busy people, you know, and they need someone they can rely on. And you build a relationship with these people. And, you know, like one of my families, the Telegraph have written about, I supported their
visa application
and did all their paperwork and signed that all off for them, and you know, supported them, and we need people like them. They were both doctors. They're an amazing family that, you know,
she's playing the game a bit. We need people like them. She's playing the game a little bit. She's doing the I'm not a racist, but I wonder if that starts to change over time.
We absolutely should welcome people like them to the UK because they're just amazing people and have a lot to give.
You found out on that 29th of July there'd been this horrific incident, three little girls.
It's the sad thing, in a way, that she's slightly inculcated with woke ideology, very slightly. But even so, because I guess of her connections, or... They jailed her.
Alice, BB and Elsie Dott had been murdered at a Taylor Swift holiday dance club in Southport. And obviously in those first hours, it wasn't very clear. Rumours were swirling online about had it been a migrant or so on. Lucy, what was your reaction when you heard that news?
Oh, I was just so upset. Like, and... angry beyond belief, you know, like when the red mist is there, and and I just can't, and I still can't comprehend how in this day and age we can allow that to happen. How have three children gone off to a dance class and their parents never get to pick them up again? Mm. I do know how that feels like, because I've lost a child, but you, as somebody that's never lost a child, you cannot even begin to comprehend what those families will go through for the rest of their life. It's just, there's just no words for it, you know. And I was just so upset, you know.
You were quite afraid, I think, because Ray was coming home from work and he said that unusually you'd bolted the front door.
I'm a bit crazy like that because of things I've gone through. I'm a bit like... the first things I sort of think is, oh gosh, am I going to drop my daughter off at gymnastics?
The worst thing is, in the studies, the more you have invested in the child, the more upsetting it is when the child dies. So you might think, oh well, if a baby dies, it can't be worse, nothing worse than that, and that's what happened to her. But no, it's someone dying aged about 10 or something, 11, 12. This is the max, you've invested all this stuff bringing up the child. And you start to debond a bit after that as the child grows up. So it's about that age, about 10, 9, about the age, I think that wasn't one of the girls about that age, the Portuguese one. That's the absolute worst age in the evolutionary psychological literature to lose a child.
Sticks on Thursday and some crazy person's going to go in there and do that. Oh, you know, let's just... you have those feelings, don't you? And a lot of my parents were saying similar things. They were really upset and really angry, and one of my parents said, I'm never letting her go to anyone but you and my mum, you know. You just can't trust anyone or anything these days, you know. It really did make people really uncomfortable about, you know, letting their children out of sight. And I know that wasn't just my point of view from as a mother, it was the families I worked for, and that, you know. And I've got lots of friends that were very upset about the situation and very worried and were like, and I don't know, yeah. I used to get a bit aggy about the front door anyway, because obviously I've got older children, so I keep the front door locked all the time. So they'd go out and then if they didn't lock the door or something, and you know, so I used to just barricade the door and lock, make it, obviously you have to make
you were in quite a heightened state.
Absolutely.
And just, at 8:30 that evening you were on Twitter and you typed, let me just read this.
Just very, very abnormal behaviour patterns. This is evidencing some level of neuroticism, which again is something that you would expect the judge to take into account, and it would be mitigating circumstances. But of course, the judge doesn't take this into account. But yet, I've heard this was exactly taken into account. Okay, Ricky Jones was found not guilty, but these were his mitigating circumstances. He was bullied as a child about his race. He has ADHD or autism or something, and so he has to be given special pleading. She evidently has special pleading, but none of this was taken into account, either because the judge just didn't want to take it into account, or she had a bad solicitor, or both.
Mass deportation now, set fire to all the effing hotels full of the bastards for all I care. While you're at it, take the treacherous government and politicians with them. I feel physically sick knowing what these families will now have to endure if that makes me racist, so be it. Now, that's a pretty angry, nasty thing to post. Looking back, what do you think made you write that, and what do you think about it now, what you said?
Of course, it wasn't my finest moment, and I definitely don't advocate violence or burning anything down or anything of the sort. It was emotion. Does that make sense? I don't know what was going on. I was just so upset and so angry and just thinking to myself, when will this stop, you know? I was just anger, you know, like, and just...
This is the problem with these kinds of laws that we have, the Public Order Act 1986, are not built for an internet age. In the old days, if you wanted to communicate something to a large number of people, i.e. publish it, you had to really, really, really think about it, and you had a lot of time to think about it. The only way, if you wrote something like that, you'd have to basically publish it in a magazine. You'd have to get it past an editor. You'd have to calmly consider your thoughts before publishing them. And social media allows us to get around that. And it's this weird place in the law whereby you are publishing, you are legally publishing something, and you are responsible for it, or the platform is responsible for it. But really, you're not, are you? That's why it's called social media. It's kind of like saying something in a pub, or just saying something to your friends in your own house. It's kind of like that. And that's not a public order issue, because then that's what it kind of feels like. It feels like you're chatting to your friends, and yeah, okay, some enemies, you know, your Adam Rutherford followers or whatever. Your hate followers might overhear and get upset, but these laws are not fit for the internet age. And I think we have to seriously consider either that something on Twitter is ring, because it can cause real life problems. You're giving people the right to publish in a way that they never used to have, because you had to get past gatekeepers who would calm you down and say, oh, steady on, we can't publish this, this is a bit much. And now people have no understanding of the law, can just publish publicly whatever they like. It's a very serious problem.
I wasn't thinking rationally. I just typed it out and went, on my way.
Do you think there's something about...
There's something about society that we shouldn't put people in a position. In some ways, is it wrong as a society that ordinary people, as she refers to herself as, can just publish like that? Is it giving them a responsibility which they really shouldn't have to have?
Social media, Twitter in particular, you know, there's a swell of a particular discussion, and that you know, you can find yourself, you know,
definitely,
say, writing things that you'd never say that in real life, would you?
No, no. My mum would not be happy.
She wouldn't.
No, and it's not something I would ordinarily say.
No, exactly. So you're caught up in a mob. You're caught up in a mob doing the kinds of things that you would do in a mob, and saying the kind of things, often quite unsavory things, that you might end up saying in a mob context where there's an object of your mob, but you're publishing it, and therefore your emotions are heightened and you're not yourself. And in those circumstances, you're publishing something and you're held responsible for it as though you have calmly and rationally published it. And I think that shouldn't be the case. And it should definitely be taken into account that the context in which she said it was a context in which she and many other people would have been heightened in emotion, almost like the French idea of crime of passion. And therefore, you should be, it's a very difficult question, this. Should you be let off because it's a crime of passion? You did it in the heat of the moment.
It's not something I would advocate, and it's just, it's not me. It really isn't. And people can choose to believe that or not. But people that know me and love me know that isn't me.
People talk about it being racist tweet. When I read it again, I thought it wasn't specifically about race, that it was distress about uncontrolled migration putting children at risk and in jeopardising safety. Is that more?
That was exactly what it was. But I know now, anybody that disagrees with my stance on that, I agree, and that's exactly the point I was coming from. But, you know, the amount of people that, for example, on social, you're a racist, you're a bigot, and it's boring now, you know, that I feel that it's lost its meaning as a word now because it's just thrown around, banded around. Mm. So I was just almost like preempting it. Yeah, I know you're going to come back to me and say, oh,
this is wonderful that we've, since the 1980s or whatever in England, we've been inculcated gradually with this new morality whereby the worst thing to be is a racist, whereby to be a rapist is not as bad as being a racist, as indeed is evidenced in her sentence compared to the sentences of some people found guilty of sexual assault. And I've been saying since I was, I don't know, when I first realised, I don't know, must have been 20, racism, racist, it's just a shut-up word. It's like the word papist or the word witch or the word heretic or the word traitor. It's a word that you have as a regime to clamp down on and intimidate people back on dissidents and to intimidate people back to the path of orthodoxy by smearing anything that remotely deviates from that path with an extremely powerful and offensive word that basically is saying that you're evil, and so thereby to reprove you back onto the path of orthodoxy. And we know that now. And the idea that someone, she calls herself an ordinary person, if she is an ordinary person, she's not. I mean, she's probably, if her husband's an engineer, she's probably sort of more upper middle class, but that she knows that and sees that is excellent news.
You don't like immigrants, you're a racist, this, that, the other. But as you say, it's not about that. It's just about making sure that the people coming into our country are vetted and that, you know, we know that they're safe in society.
And those little children you were looking after that day, maybe only one of them white, English, they were at risk as well, right?
Everybody's children are at risk. It doesn't matter what, you know, a child is a child. It doesn't matter what colour they're from, where they've come from. It's our job as a country to protect our children and the future of our children. And to be honest, I don't think we do a particularly good job of that right now.
No. So you took Harley, lovely German pointer, for a walk. And about three and a half hours later, you obviously thought better of it and you deleted the tweet. What was your thought process then?
Yeah, I just went for a walk, you know, put my AirPods in, took the dog for a few miles and calmed myself down. That's my, you know, that's my thing, exercise, go for a run, go for a walk, calm, you know.
Yeah.
And then I came back and I thought, oh, no, you can't write that. That's really not an okay thing to write. I didn't really mean that, you know, take it down. Mm. So that's what I did. I didn't comment on it. I didn't read the comments. I just deleted the post and didn't think much more of it, to be honest.
Hmm. But somebody had screenshotted it and reported you. So 8 days later, the police came round to the house and they arrested you.
As well, that we create our own little Stasi, our own little willing Stasi. The fact that you have the right to unpublish something whenever you like, and that they, oh no, no, they've, somebody has, some Karen has screenshotted that. Our own little willing Stasi that carries mobile phones around all the time to spy on other people. Our own little willing Stasi that screenshots things. That's what this ability for everybody to be filmmakers, for everybody to be, brings about, our own little internal Stasi.
for inciting racial hatred. Lucy, you said to me, it didn't matter whatever I said, I was a lost cause. They wanted to hammer me. What made you think quite quickly that they wanted to hammer you?
Just the legal advice that I got. He was kind of, that was his advice as well. He was like, they're not playing by the rules with these cases. I've not seen anything like this before.
But that's interesting. So even the solicitor was aware that the legal process had been corrupted, which was bloody obvious because it was a period of hysteria. The Prime Minister standing there on television, you will go to jail. You're throwing out all legal niceties, making it quite clear that you, for this period at least, normal democracy and normal free is suspended. That's very, very interesting.
You should never have been remanded, but they have remanded you. I'm going to try and get you bail, but, I'm not hopeful. It was just the general consensus across the legal board, solicitors and lawyers and barristers, that these weren't normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. These cases were being treated different. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they were giving out a lot heftier sentences to people than they ordinarily would. They were remanded people when they wouldn't ordinarily remand them. And then, of course, it's very difficult once you've been remanded to get to change legal team, to get legal advice, to get other opinions.
But coming back to the police, so you're in the police station. Obviously, for someone like you, this is very frightening and alien territory. Do you think, looking back, that you were a bit naive and trusting about
police? Absolutely. We've always been brought up, the police are there to help you, not to stitch you up. And obviously, I had a solicitor and I'd gone through the tweet with her.
Again, it's wonderful that a person who sees themselves as an ordinary person and who other people and who is being presented as an ordinary person is aware the police are not your friend. The police are there to stitch you up. The police are there to find you guilty of a crime. The police are not, these days in the UK, increasingly are just nasty people who are functionaries of the government and are inculcated with woke ideology. And a lot of them increasingly are women, particularly the senior police officers that have sociology degrees and God knows what from crap universities, which they probably have a chip on their shoulder about. And they're there to get you. And if you're lost, don't go and ask a policeman. Do the opposite. For God's sake, don't talk to. Just don't speak to a policeman.
Prior to my interview, and I'd spoke to her, and her words to me were, when I explained myself and what I meant and what had happened, she said, "You know what, Lucy, I think you've put that really eloquently. I think you should go in there and explain yourself to them. Don't, no comment, And I think she was thinking at the same time, this is really not, it was just a mistake, an angry mistake. You took it down. You didn't mean it. You're not, this right-wing terrorist. And you've explained yourself really well, so go and do that in there." And obviously I had my interview. It went for, I don't know how long it was, but a while. At no point, my sister was sitting next to me. At no point, she kicked me under the table or nudged me or stopped the interview and say, you're doing yourself no favours there. And she was happy with everything I'd said and and I'd explained to the police what my stance on immigration and illegal, made it quite clear that I know the difference between immigration and illegal immigration. I feel that that was massively twisted and used against me, and I feel that I would have been much better just saying no comment, because they wouldn't have had anything.
This is the naivety of people with the police. I'm amazed if the solicitor told her to say that. The solicitors that I know will always say to their clients, don't say anything. You have the right to remain silent, though it may harm your defence if you fail to mention my questions and we go around in court. It may harm your defence, but ultimately, a good barrister can argue, well, no, this person has the absolute right to remain silent and indeed should argue, and does not trust the police. And hopefully they will be able to argue in future and has good reason not to trust the police. We look at all the awful things the police have done. Look at all the cases they've cocked up and manipulated and whatever. So we shouldn't trust the police under any circumstances. Never, ever, ever talk to the police. And that's that.
To twist around back on me.
So police gave your statement to the Crown Prosecution Service. Mrs. Connolly doesn't like immigrants. She thinks they are dangerous to children. D- Did you say that?
Absolutely not. We had a conversation about how I knew, you know, I think my words were, I need to get the police.
The police lied. Like the police lied with regard to the Birmingham Six, like the police lied with regard to the Guildford Four. The police lied. People, often not particularly intelligent people, who are a bit insecure because of that and so therefore like to have power, lied. I am surprised.
The police interview. I'm well aware of how important immigration is to this country. I'm well aware that if I went to Northampton Hospital right now, if I said I didn't want to be treated by an immigrant, I'd probably be dead.
Well, no, you'd probably be arrested for incitement to hatred or something like that. And that's an absurd argument. We should be training enough doctors. That's that. In Finland, if you go to the hospital, you will be treated by a Finnish doctor. And you will be treated by a Finnish nurse. So only twice in my time in this country have I met doctors that are not Finnish. That's an absurd argument that we should not need to get doctors in from abroad. We should train enough of our own doctors. That's just decadence. That's just Roman decadence, to allow foreigners to do things that you should be doing yourselves. That's like having a mercenary army and saying, oh, well, I'm well aware that if I didn't want immigration, then we wouldn't have an army. No, the army should be composed of British people.
Like I said, some of my families that I work for, you know, they're Nigerian doctors, and I would have them treat me over, you know, they're the most compassionate people I know. So I'm well aware that the country needs immigration. I'm well aware.
I remember I was a particularly rude doctor at my local doctor's surgery when I was a kid called, was it Dr. Khan? It might have been Dr. Khan. And I rang up, I don't know what I wanted an appointment with reference to. And I said to the receptionist, they said, we can put you with Iqbal, that was his name. We can put you with Dr. Iqbal. I said, I want an English doctor. And this was about 2001. And she's perfectly happy with that. She said, okay, sir, well, we can get you to put with Dr. Hughes, but it won't be till next week. Which says something as well. We could get you this week, Dr. Iqbal, next week, Dr. Hughes. I.e., there was no massive waiting list in those days either.
If we kicked every immigrant out tomorrow, we'd be screwed, you know. So I explained this to them, and I explained it's not immigration that I have an issue with. I have no issue with people's skin colour, race, religion, anything of that. It's simply the fact that these particular...
It's so sad. She's imbibed all these left-wing ideas, all these decadent ideas, and still she gets punished severely. Still she is jailed, despite the fact that I assume she genuinely believes this crap.
A group of people are unchecked, and I don't feel that is, you know, it's safe for our children to be walking the streets with people that we don't know who they are, where they've come from. And I appreciate we've got enough of people that are born in the UK that are, you know, do awful things, but if we can just stop one child, something bad happening to them, you know, that's one is too many, isn't it? Even if it's only one and I don't think for one minute that every single person coming over on a boat and living in a hotel is a rapist or a murderer. I'm sure the vast majority of them are really, really decent people just wanting to build a better life. But even if there's one or two in there, that's too many for our children.
So on the 4th of August, Sir Starmer, let me quote him to you. I utterly condemn the far-right thuggery, be in no doubt that those who have participated in violence will face the full force of the law. The police will be making arrests, individuals will be held on remand, charges will follow and convictions will follow. I guarantee you will regret taking part in this disorder, whether directly or those whipping up this.
I'm quite surprised by this, because I started this with a very positive view of Lucy Connolly, and I regarded her as a martyr and a political prisoner and a person that was, as it were, on our side and an enemy of the regime. And the truth is much more subtle, and in a sense, it's more poignant. She is pro, to some extent, what's going on. She is pro mass immigration. She is pro the taking over of the institutions of the state by foreigners. She is in favour of all this stuff. But she deviated in the wrong place at the wrong time from orthodoxy in a moment of madness, where probably her, I could imagine that she's forced herself via effortful control. She's a reasonably intelligent and articulate woman. She's forced herself to adopt essentially the in high status luxury belief doctrines of being pro-immigration and multiculturalism's grey and all this kind of stuff. And then in a moment of madness, that way in which she had forced herself to adopt these ideas, her true beliefs, her truth kind of broke through and came to the surface, which is that this is ruining my country and it's terrible and it's awful. And now she's managed to kind of repress those ideas again. But that this regime is so paranoid that even though she's basically one of them and kind of supports it broadly, kind of, she's still jailed. I mean, this is how wicked this regime is, that they will jail almost their own.
Action online. Lucy, you were denied bail 6 days after the Prime Minister made that statement. You were a perfect candidate for bail, first time offender, not a flight risk.
Could be Stockholm syndrome. Could it be sort of Stockholm? Not Stockholm syndrome is that you identify with the aggressor. So is there some level on which, well, you have a state that is aggressive, a state that is hurting you, a state that is hurting your interests, and you identify with the aggressor and you decide that you like what that state is doing in order to cope, in order to just get through life and not be on edge and tense and not open up the possibility of getting into a conflict all the time. So with Stockholm syndrome, you decide that you quite like and you have positive feelings for your captor and they're actually a good person. That's Stockholm syndrome. Now, presumably people react like that with regard to the state. They know that the government is destroying Britain. They know the government is doing all these terrible things. And so they force themselves to adopt the beliefs of the government. Part of it also could be sort of insecurity. You want to feel that you're of high status and whatever. And so you adopt the high status beliefs and it reassures you you're of high status. There's all kinds of reasons why you become indoctrinated by this. But it's not how you really feel. And occasionally things break out, as happened with her tweet. It's almost like a Freudian thing, like it's something repressed that comes up to the surface.
It's a flight risk. But bail was denied. It was denied twice. Lucy, do you think Keir Starmer influenced the way you and others were treated by the criminal justice system?
100%. Yes. When he made his speech in the beginning, this is before I was even arrested, I thought it was very divisive. It was very much, oh, well, if you're bothered about children being murdered, you're a right wing, you know, you're far right. That's not, you know, people are going to be and are entitled to be upset, deeply upset about the unnecessary death of children. And let's not forget the other children that were, you know, didn't lose their lives and what they now have to go through and what they went through. You know, nobody should have to go through that. So it's completely plausible that people are going to be upset and angry about the situation. So why not just say, listen, you know, release the facts around the case. I understand in some cases they can't name people for legal and everybody's entitled to a fair trial and I stand by that. I'm jumping a bit here, but that's another thing. Even had I gone to trial, it was so prejudiced by that point, by the government, by the police, by the press. I don't even think I would have had a fair trial because people have been told stuff already. Mm.
This is definitely true. She makes a very good point here, and this is why we have this cognizance of the left saying, look, she decided to plead guilty, Ricky went to trial. No. Did he have a fair trial? No, he didn't. He had a woke judge, this Rosa Dean, that clearly directed the jury to find him not guilty, and he probably had an ethnically diverse jury. That, considering what the issues at hand about riots against immigration and so forth, would probably have been rather on his side. What kind of jury would she have got? He was the recorder of Birmingham, Judge Melbourne Inman. So was it in Birmingham Crown Court? Because if it was, I can't see how she'd have got a fair trial there, considering the likely makeup of the jury.
That actually wasn't true.
We should add at this point that statement the police gave to the CPS, your family and solicitor challenged it, and they did in fact
change it.
Yeah. But by that stage
it was too late. The BBC and the Sky and all of those people, they'd already reported that I hated immigrants and I said they were a danger to the children and I had several racist tweets on my Twitter, which just wasn't true.
No.
But the damage had been done by then. So even had I have pled not guilty and gone to trial, yeah. my case would have been seriously prejudiced.
Yeah.
Now, this is the thing, that they, with regard to other cases, Tommy Roberts or whatever, they're talking about contempt of court and prejudicing a case. Yet the newspapers reported this. The newspapers, therefore, were prejudicing a case, were engaging, should really, in kind of a contempt of court. And yet they're allowed to get away with it. They're allowed to get away with it. But yet we were told, oh, you're risking contempt of court if you name or say anything about Rutacabana and so on. So again, two-tier justice. If you do something that's against the regime, they can prejudice your trial. And that's absolutely fine. But if you do something that's, if you're seen as on the side of the regime, essentially, you know, you're an immigrant or whatever, then they can't prejudice your trial.
And that point you're making was that the Prime Minister, who had an opportunity to unite the country...
Why, exactly. Why did he not just say, look, this is horrendous. We completely understand why you're all upset and angry. We know there's an issue. We know you're all upset about the immigration levels. We are going to work really hard with you all, with the country, and we're going to find a solution. Instead of saying, anybody that's upset about this is a far-right, you know, terrorist, and you will be dealt with.
Yeah.
You know, that was basically what he said.
And you also said to the police, I'm just so shocked. People appear to be more bothered by my political views than by children being murdered. Lucy, do you think it suited the authorities to deflect attention away from the savagery yes. of the murder of the children
onto people like you? Yeah, and I stand by that. I cannot for the life of me.
And the savagery was incredible. Only one person really reported the savagery from court, which is Charlie Bentley Astor, and one of these girls was practically beheaded.
I would not be more offended by an offensive tweet than I would be upset about a child losing their life.
I think you understand that heresy is generally more offensive to people than murder. And for left-wing people, you committed heresy, and that's worse than murder. Particularly if you're mentally unstable, as left-wing people often are, and therefore you need very, very extreme views and black and white opinions, and you go through periods of religious fervour. Heresy is the worst thing.
Life, let alone three. I don't get that mentality. You can be upset about what I wrote, but I don't understand that you would be more upset about that than the death of the children. And that seemed to be the case. They seemed to be more bothered what I'd said than why I'd said it and what led to me saying that.
Lucy, you're a fighter. I know you're a fighter. So people will ask, why did you plead guilty to the offence of distributing material with the intention of stirring up racial hatred? Why not hold your nerve and plead not guilty?
Because I'd been remanded. I didn't know how long. You know, I've met women that have been on remand 2 years and are still waiting for a trial. Mm. The courts are so far behind. I'm not sure in my case they would have been in any hurry to get my case to trial. And I have a daughter that needs me. You know, I'm a stay-home mummy. She's had me there her whole life. And all I was thinking, what is my quickest route to her? Yeah. Like, so I felt that I wasn't going to be successful in any way, whatever way I turned in this. So at the time, all I was thinking is, right, they're going to throw the book at me for this. They've made that quite clear. They've done it to other people. What is my quickest route home? And after discussions with my lawyer about how long of a sentence he thought I'd got, the time I'd served remand, he also told me I would get tagged. It was kind of decided that the sentence they were expecting me to get, plus, you know, HGC tag, I'd be home at kind of Christmas time.
Yeah. Your lawyer pretty much said, if you plead guilty, you'll be home by Christmas.
If you don't plead guilty, you'll lose your credit. You'll get your credit if you plead guilty. And so at that point, all I was thinking about was my family.
Plead guilty, you'll be home by Christmas. So, why would she think she'd be home by Christmas if she pleaded guilty? If she was given the minimum... Hang on a minute. No, this doesn't make any sense. No. She was given the minimum sentence that you could, as I understand it, that is imposed for such an offence, the minimum prison sentence. I don't know if it was within the judge's discretion to simply fine her. I get the impression that that law demands that you be jailed for a minimum of what she was given, and for a maximum of 7 years. So no, and she did that, so she's in August, September, October, November, December, so forth. No early release scheme is that generous. I do not believe that, okay, there may have been the feeling that they will suspend the sentence, but then you're not home by Christmas, you're home immediately. How could she think that? I don't believe either the lawyer is not telling the truth, or she's not telling the truth. There is no early release scheme that would allow you to serve 4 months of a 31-month sentence, and she got the minimum sentence that could be imposed, as I understand it. The minimum custodial sentence. So it's either... No. I don't know if this is like an autistic thing, but it's either that you get a fine or a suspended sentence, in which case you go home at once. But you can't be home by Christmas. That's crap.
And all I was thinking about was my quickest route home. At that point, I'd passed caring whether I was going to get a criminal record or found, that didn't matter anymore. All I was thinking about is how I was going to get home to my child. You know, I've lost one child. When I don't want to be away from her. You know, I can't get that time back.
I think what people don't understand is that you're not just waiting for this stuff to unfold. You're in prison, right? Which is, for someone like you, this is a very
alien,
scary environment. And you're not able to get lots of the good advice that people on the outside, number of barristers were saying.
An incredibly biased interview in her favour. I don't think I've ever seen such a conspicuously biased interview. Well, there was that interview that Oprah did with Harry and Meghan, but you know, that aside, this is so biased. And yet she's able to drop this clangor about being home by Christmas, which is just a term that she's learnt probably from discussions of World War One or something, which of course started, if I remember right, that started in June, and the belief was that they would be home by Christmas. And that's the phrase that was used. You can't, if she's saying that she could have been given a sentence that short, when there are statutory guidelines, if you give a prison sentence, and you don't have to, I mean, I assume that within the law you can fine people or whatever. That doesn't make any sense, what she's just said. And that makes me start to doubt other things that she's said, because that can't be true.
To Ray, your husband, tell Lucy she mustn't plead guilty. Yeah. But you were looking around this prison, presumably thinking, oh my God, yeah, I could be in here for 2 years waiting for trial.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, oh, she'll be 15 by the time I'm out, and all, you know, and that was all that was ever going through. The dog will be dead by the time I get home, you know. All this crazy stuff was going through my head. I can't be away from home that long. I'm needed. I need to be with my family. So by the time it got to that point, I really didn't care it got to the point where I actually didn't care what I was pleading. I just wanted to be home with my family, and we spoke about it, and that seemed the quickest route home.
So we subsequently found out that Lord Hermer, who's the Attorney General, he had to approve your prosecution. You appear to have pleaded guilty to a higher charge, to the 1A, which was inciting serious violence. I'll ask you about that in a minute. But you've got you've got Lord Hermer, Starmer, and other, you know, former Director of Public Prosecutions. To what extent do you think this whole denied bail, rapidly shunted along this conveyor belt towards a guilty plea, is there an element of coercion of people?
Absolutely, absolutely. Everybody is entitled to a fair trial. Everybody, the justice system should serve everybody the same. But it doesn't. We didn't get all the same rights. Ricky Jones is a perfect example of that. He did say something violent. He did say something he shouldn't have said. As I've said, do I think he should have gone to prison? Absolutely not. But he was, you know, bailed. Mm-hmm. I wasn't. Mm-hmm. So he was able to sit round a table. And Ray has always maintained to me, used to say, Lucy, if you were able to sit round a table with the people that I'm able to sit round, you would never have gone guilty. And we had several arguments, mm-hmm. you know, because I used to say to him, well, it's all well for you to say this to me, but you're not the one sitting in prison away from our child. I am. So, you know, and if I'd have if Ray had had it his own way, I would have never have gone guilty. Because he was obviously speaking to Adam and lawyers and things behind the scene, but I wasn't able to do that. I was just going on secondhand information, plus what my, you know, lawyer was saying to me at the time, and it was conflicting information. You know, so I didn't have that opportunity.
Ray said something very sad to me. Lucy basically had to admit she was the person she was the opposite of. Now, I know you and your two sisters were raised by your lovely mum, who's just through there in the kitchen. And she described herself to me as old-fashioned Labour. And you and the other girls were brought up to be very much non-racist.
Oh, my goodness me. So there we go. So her mother is Labour, left-wing. She's imbibed left-wing value. This is... I just can't... I know I've said it before, but... And yet they still treat her like that. I guess because her husband's a Conservative councillor.
Absolutely.
And was it painful to be demonised as Tory councillor's racist wife?
Absolutely. I didn't want, you know, I don't want to walk down the street and people think I'm a racist. Being a racist is not a good trait, you know. We shouldn't be judging people by the colour of the skin, the religious, the creed, any of that. We judge people.
And you've just said earlier that this term is thrown about too much and it's lost all meaning, or worse, that effect. But now you accept, the word as a legitimate, neutral concept.
People on who they are, the merit of who they are. We've never been brought up to, you know. And as I've said many a time, I've looked after many a children that are from all over the place, and I've quite literally treated them as I treat my own children, and loved them and protected them like I do my own. It doesn't matter where they come from; they're children.
No. So. It was very stinging. Do you think that being Tory councillor's wife was different from Ricky Jones, Labour councillor?
I might change my name to Deed Poll to be honest, to Tory councillor's wife. I'm sick of hearing it. Like, and it's really, what's the word? You know, like, we're so like women and their own people now, and feminism and all of this. Why am I being linked to him? He did nothing wrong. He didn't.
Good point.
Even though I'd sent that tweet. No. Why is he being demonised? Why is any politics coming into it? I said what I said through anger and, you know, being upset. Nothing to do with politics. No. I would have said the same if, you know, if another government was in power. And let's not forget they actually were. There was another government in power when, you know, the lead up to this and the failings to this case.
So it was,
you know, so it wasn't a case of it's, you know, it's all Labour's fault. It's not.
But I think, would there be an element...
Hang on, no, there's a Labour deep state that's been gradually in power since the early 2000s. It is all their fault.
That the media quite enjoyed the fact that Ray was a Tory councillor.
Absolutely. Yeah. Completely. I just, as I say, I'll never understand why I got the, you know, the airtime that I did. I remember when I put my plea in and I was on video link, and obviously it's just down the corridor from where the house block is at the prison, so it's not a long walk, you know, just walk across. And I'd put my plea in, I'd left, I'd gone back to my room, Sky News was on, breaking news, Lucy Connolly, and my face was all over the news, and I was like, I don't get it. And my lawyer said, I've never seen so many press at a plea hearing or a sentencing hearing. He says, I don't understand, I don't get it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think I will ever understand why it was made. I was made so much bigger than any other.
It was to make you a scapegoat and send a clear message that such behaviour absolutely won't be tolerated. And it was also, I suspect, because you were a woman rather than a man, one expects such behaviour maybe of young men, not of middle-aged, really quite middle-class women. And probably the fact that you were a Conservative councillor's wife, it just makes it a much more interesting story. And journalists are about interesting stories.
Anybody else that were involved in anything to do with the Southport, be it online, be it, and there's, like people have pointed out, there are still lots of people in prison that put stuff online that absolutely shouldn't be there either. You know, these people are not criminals.
Perhaps it was the opportunity to use the very attractive police mugshot of you again.
Oh yes, that one. I've never forgiven anybody that ever showed that mugshot.
No, I know, you've said this to me. So let's go to the sentencing. Justice Melbourne Inman was very harsh in his remarks about you, and some people would say quite political. He said it's a strength of our society that it is both diverse and inclusive. It's always a very small minority.
So there you go. So that's a biased judge. If you say, as a judge, it's a strength of our society that's diverse and inclusive, you are a left-wing campaigning judge. That's what you are. So how could she have got a fair trial if she had pled guilty if you have a nakedly left-wing judge presiding over your trial? If she pled not guilty, if you have a judge like that presiding over your trial.
Minority of people will seek an excuse to use violence and disorder causing injury, damage, loss and fear to wholly innocent members of the public, and sentences for those who incite racial hatred and disharmony in our society are intended to both punish and deter. Now, I've read...
Hang on a minute. I wasn't aware it was a crime to incite disharmony in our society. So this again shows you the pure left-wing bias of the judge.
A lot about the remarks and the charges. The judge didn't give much, if any, weight to your mitigation. So you were of previous good character. You had a pile of wonderful references from immigrant parents saying Lucy's the kindest British person we've met, she's gone the extra mile for us, and we're from Nigeria, Bangladesh. And you had lost a child of your own in 2011 due to medical neglect, which had left you with post-traumatic stress disorder. Lucy, how did you feel when Justice Inman said 31 months custodial sentence?
I was really shocked. I was not expecting, like, the discussions we'd had, it was a high sentence, and obviously I'd pleaded the guilty plea to get my 25% off. And he said, you know, if you'd have gone guilty and you'd have been found, if you'd have gone not guilty and been found guilty at trial, you would have got this. So I'm going to start at this point. Surely that's the whole point of going guilty, though, isn't it? So that you don't get to trial and it works in your favour. But it didn't work in my favour because he just went from that starting point anyway.
Yeah.
And then, you know, brought it down. So technically I got 4 years, I can't exactly remember. And I'm not going to lie, as soon as he started with his speech, my kind of eyes rolled to the back of my head and I thought, oh, here we go.
Right, yeah.
Straight out of Starmer's mouth. That's what I thought when he started speaking.
So I'm going to be made an example of.
Yeah. I knew that, and to be honest, I didn't hear a lot of what he said. And I tell you another really bizarre thing about that situation. I've never seen Judge Inman. So when the camera was set up in the court, I was facing the legal team, and the judge was coming in and out, and I've never laid eyes on him. So when he was saying all of this, he never looked me in the face, and I find that quite, you know, if you're sentencing somebody, surely you look at them and you say, "You've done this. This is da 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 da. You're having this." He didn't. I found that really quite strange that the camera was turned away. I'd never set eyes on him. He could probably obviously see me, I'm assuming. But when he read that out, he wasn't talking to me because I couldn't see him.
He knew you had a 12-year-old daughter.
He did.
Lucy, I want to talk about Harry because I do feel he's a big part of this story. Harry was your son, your little boy, just 19 months old when he died after a series of medical mishaps, to say the least. What was he like?
Oh, he was a dream. He was didn't sleep, but he was always so happy, and such, he really was a joy. I mean, both our kids were actually, when that, you know, they were both really happy, you know, independent babies and toddlers, and you know, he just loved life. Everything was great to him, you know. He was like the happiest little thing, and he brought everyone so much joy. He never cried. Had the odd tantrum, I guess, but
I think I get the idea. So mixed feelings, really. I started watching this rooting for her and seeing her as a martyr to those of us that wish to end this dictatorship, this tyranny that has gradually enveloped Britain, or certainly England. And as is usually the case when you see things either in a very positive or very negative light, the truth is much, much, much more nuanced. She is a person who has been inculcated with left-wing views. She talks about straight out of Starmer's mouth, like the Starmer regime almost. But she's not that far removed from this way of thinking. In that she says essentially semi-woke things. She accepts, for whatever psychological reason that I don't know, various dimensions of wokeness. We need immigration. We need immigration for doctors and nurses and so forth. You shouldn't judge people in any way by where they're from. You should treat everybody. All of these kinds of ideas that have led us into this mess. Let me just do the maths quickly. 25% of 30, is about 7. So she would have got 7 months off for pleading guilty, a 31-month sentence, which was, as I understand it, the minimum. So I don't understand why she said that thing about Christmas. Oh, I'll be home by Christmas. It couldn't have been the case. So it just doesn't... I don't understand why she said that. She's verbally tilted, obviously. Reasonably articulate. I like the way that the experience has obviously kind of red-pilled her. But it's almost as though it hasn't red-pilled her enough. Maybe she's cunning. Maybe she's clever. Maybe she thinks, oh, no, I need to come across in this way. To get maximum kind of support. Because obviously the fact that she gave that interview rather than just want to just go home and get on with her life, she gave that interview is interesting because it means that she's prepared to fight back and keep going and keep up the pressure and fight against what has happened to her, which I think is excellent news. So there's things about her that I like and there's things about her that I don't. But that notwithstanding, it's appalling what's happened to her, and at least she is kind of fighting back. She has the balls to stand up there and fight back, because you'd think she could be broken and devastated by this. And that I very much admire. So good luck to her. With a certain degree of caution, I could say she could be very useful symbolically to the cause of trying to get rid of this evil Starmer and broadly Blair regime.
Are you ready for the future of the West?